Okay, at this time, I'd like to introduce Dr. Philip McLaughlin, who will be our speaker for today's conference call. You can find Dr. McLaughlin's bio on the notes for today's conference, and here he is.
All right. Thank you very much, Brian, and it's good to be again with everyone, and I assume that you have the research notes ready. We'll be adding to those notes from time to time as we give you instructions to refresh the page that you're looking at. And so you have the first version, and as we move through this briefing, you'll be able to get more. Before I get started with the main research brief, let me point out that we have the conversion ratio optimization conference with relation to Google and Overture and Yahoo Stores and a number of other key topics, subscription paths and so on, taking place on May 27th and May 28th. And that we have, again, not started any outside promotion from within outside of our list to give everyone a chance to get in on those dates before we do. We're limiting it to just 50 people. And so if you want to find out more, you can click on the link on your notes, and it will give you that information. Having said that, the topic this afternoon is effective email campaigns, and particularly with regards to a pure retail operation, because I think retailers are faced with specific challenges in relation to how they do this. The data may be just as effective and just as helpful if you're a publisher or a service provider, but if you are a publisher or a service provider, you have quality content if you're a good one, and you certainly have content. The average retailer's content consists of product offerings, and so they have a unique challenge, and that can be addressed in what we're going to look at in just a few moments. But before we do that, let me point out that we've got several of our staff online to help us. I won't go into their bios either, but we'll be referencing them as we move forward. And feel free also to ask questions as we proceed and to make comments and get involved as you need to. Also, don't feel any need to at all. We just want to deliver the data and help you if you have questions. So we'll begin, and as we do that, I'd like to point out in your research notes are some sample emails which I received this very day. They're all trying to sell me a mortgage. And if you look in your notes, in fact, you may need to refresh some of you to see these. There are three different samples. And the first one has the subject line to take control of the lending process. Says consumer loans for any reason regardless of credit, we have you approved, gives me a link, and has an unsubscribe, and then goes on. I notice it has an actual address at the base of the email, trying to comply, I assume, with upcoming legislation. But one thing is for certain, I've never subscribed to that nor any list, and I certainly didn't give them the permission to email me. The other thing that is for certain is that I'm likely not going to respond to this email, and likely neither is anyone else. They'll have some response, I assume, but the numbers are incredibly low, and they're competing against a number of the many other emails that I received today in like fashion. We're looking at these bad versions because before this is over, we're going to look at a version that worked, as we in the mortgage business, but an email approach that's unique. You also should see a second one that says hello, and then it has some text which obviously was improperly inserted, and then it says, would you refinance if you knew you could save thousands? So this is an improvement. Now they're building a problem and trying to get my attention, but again, they have text lines that are messed up. They say refinance today to a much lower rate. They offer a benefit, and then they try to get me to a link, and then they sign it personally. This letter is at least a letter, at least it addresses me, at least it doesn't call me by name, but it says hello, and it has some personality to it. Still, it's very anemic and gets horrible results, and it's also illegal. There's a third here, refinance today as low as 1.5%, buy the home of your dreams. Visit our website for details. Same simple approach. All three of these are horrendously bad emails. Now, most of us are more sophisticated. Most of us in this phone call are more sophisticated than to send an email like that to our list. But by the same token, what I have discovered, and I see it often, and many times talking with some of the largest groups on the Internet in terms of their specific industry or niche, not only are we ineffective at capturing the email addresses, but despite the fact that many of us have captured some, because of our simple, you know, by default, because we've been on the email, on the internet long enough, you know, taking orders or with a form box somewhere that's collecting some. I've talked to retailers with lists ranging from a few thousand to hundreds of thousand who are still not seeing a real return on those names. I'm not really getting into my notes yet. I'm about to get into my notes. In fact, I'm just speaking extemporaneously right now because I think it's critical that we get a hold of what the real issue is. Before I even talk to you about how to be more effective with your emailing, I think it's critical to help you to understand that you may be leaving 30% of your marketing budget on the table. Certainly, you may be losing a great deal of revenue because, A, you're either not capturing enough email addresses from the people who visit your site. Historically, I would say that you need to be capturing somewhere near 5%. And if you're capturing less than that, you're certainly probably doing something wrong. If you're capturing more than that, you're probably doing some things very right. However, whatever that number is, and many of you capture more because of the nature of your business, but if you're a pure retailer with a product offering, it's unlikely that you're capturing more than 5%. And it's also unlikely that you're capturing as many as you should. And because of that, you're paying twice to achieve or to reach or to get a relationship with the same customer because you've paid a cost per click, many of you, to get that visitor to your site, and now they leave and you have no way to contact them again. You're paying yet again to get them back. Having said that, we need to address that, and there's other research that we've done on email capture that you may want to reference, and there's links in the bottom of that. We've done a lot of research in that area, and that could be helpful. But even with capturing the names, what I discover is so many of us just really don't know how to use them in the most effective way. And I want to point out for you that email marketing starts with your customer service emails. It doesn't start with special offerings and bonuses and discount items. But if you design a customer service message so that it's optimal, and by the way, this will be the subject of a future brief, you can turn your communication into relationship. And you can turn relationship into trust, and you can turn trust into more sales. But you have to use your customer service email strategically and not simply get by with a quick message. Everything about that, including the PS, is very, very important, and it will be the topic of another brief. Most of us aren't doing that to begin with, but when we're sending out our periodic mailings, which often don't go on a very specific or predictable schedule or go too frequently, we are not getting the response that we hear of, that others are getting, and that we wish we could have. At the labs here, we have repeatedly stressed that the best publishers are good retailers, and the best retailers are good publishers. However, many pure retail operations lack the in-house talent or the strategic relationships to create valuable content for their customers. Without an email message that contains some value for the customer, they risk having their messages fall prey to the delete button. And so they struggle because the customer sees typically an HTML heavy graphic email that strikes them with a bunch of items that are on special, and there's a few people that respond to that, but most delete it before they even get a chance to encounter the value proposition of the offer. Question is there a viable solution? And the question is, what if you could leverage the online marketing resources you're already using to create a perception of value in the eyes of your customers? In this brief, we will look at a technique to do that, and I'm going to start with our findings. Our research partner that we worked with in this particular case had thus far achieved pretty anemic results with their email marketing. Can't reveal who they are, of course, but they were doing, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of 17 to 20 million in Yahoo, in a Yahoo store this year, which means they were pretty dominant in their little niche. They sent an email out, which you can see and which is in front of you and which we'll go over together. This is what it looked like before we got involved. At the top was Christmas Blowout, and it had the exclamation point. And the coupon code was GIFT and 5% off any purchase. Offer expires December 31st. Not valid with any other offers. Only one coupon per order. And then it had the URL, and click here to send this to a friend. The net result was they sent a lot of emails, and they got a really, really poor response. I think before I even, again, deviating from my notes, I think if you look at this email, you can see many things are wrong, which we'll get to in a moment. But most importantly, you can see that what they sent was not a letter, not anything to establish relationship with people who had already visited their site and who should they should be building relationships. They sent a newspaper ad, so to speak, and worse, an ugly newspaper ad, because you know, in an email, it doesn't have the same impact that it would had it been attractively arranged in a layout somewhere else. And so they didn't get good results. And it was heavy on HTML graphics and low on content. We recommended a dramatic change, which, by the way, they were quite skeptical of, in both the tone and the content of their email, both tone and the content of their email. And basically, here are the improvements we made to the copy for our test campaign. Go ahead, Brian, and drop in the next email, if you would. And those of you that are listening are going to want to refresh. I'll give you just a moment to refresh your screen.
Should be there now.
Okay. So here's the email. This e-bulletin is strictly for customers that have shopped with this or have requested to be notified of special clearance. Now, first thing it did out of courtesy is tell them why you were receiving the email. And, you know, it's a valuable piece of space, those first three lines, and you might invest it with a lot of things, but sometimes investing it with the courtesy and of letting people know why they're getting the email is the best use of that particular space. It says, hello. We are liquidating. By the way, there's a reason why it says hello, and we'll get to that in a moment, why it doesn't say their name or something else. But let's go on. We are liquidating post-Christmas inventory, and to make sure our pricing is attractive, we have surveyed the top five resellers on the net. As of Thursday, March 4th, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, these are the lowest prices on the Internet. The sources are provided. Product list and tracking URL. By the way, that's the sources for those prices being the lowest. What it says product list and tracking URL. Where the price, that's where the actual items went. Items 1 through 5 went through there. And then underneath it, special note. By the way, you'll notice it's a plain text email. The one that was sent initially was not. Special note, spend over $250 and receive free ground shipping. Simply enter coupon code FREEGROUND on the check page. Your time is valuable. Thanks for shopping with us. Then there was a real signature, then customer service information, and then privacy and unsubscription information. Now, we obviously crafted this email and this message based on a set of principles. And I want to begin to review those principles with you. And you may want to take notes about those that are most effective. Jimmy Ellis, we did a similar program with you. And you may want to jump in at any time here and comment on these. Please feel free just to jump in, Jimmy, as I'm speaking.
Great.
And I'll probably talk a little bit about what happened with you before I look at the specific results with this group. Let me just point out for you, Jimmy Ellis was a research partner with our team. Some of you know we form research partnerships with companies in the private sector, and we do research, and they get to grow from that relationship, and we get lots of good data. Jimmy's group was that, and he was so effective, and they grew dramatically. But eventually, Jimmy joined our group. Now, he's a full-time analyst working with our team now. So he can respond historically to his relationship and what he discovered when we did a similar approach with him. And now, of course, he worked with us, and he actually helped to engineer this email that we're looking at right now. In fact, Jimmy spearheaded this project that we're going over right now in terms of the research. So having said that, let's go over the keys that we discovered while conducting this research, or prior to that we implemented in terms of principle. First of all, number one, when you're preparing an email, you need to focus on value. Make sure the email offers a clear, very clear benefit to the customer. Number two, avoid sales hype. Use a personal tone in your email. Sometimes even chatty is effective. And do so without going overboard. There's a certain, you know your audience and you know what's appropriate. But the general rule is you can be more personal with your particular audience than you probably think, and you'll be a lot more effective if you are. We have, in certain situations, when it's Christmas time, advised our research partner to talk about the holidays, about their own shopping experience, about their whether they're ready or not for the holidays, and to do so in a genuine way that helps to kind of share a bit of the personality of the person who's writing the email. We have one particular research partner that has done this so effectively, and they're in a business that caters to housewives or to mothers, and you know, I don't know if housewives is the appropriate term, but certainly women who are married and probably between the ages of, I would say, 30 and 60.
Homemakers.
Yeah, and these women absolutely love this guy. They are they hold him in the highest regard, and he is in the South, and they consider him a good old down home boy who's helping them sort and solve all their problems. What they don't really know is that the guy is a Jewish attorney, and it's not that he's disgenuine in any way, and I'm not saying that to say that he's fooling them. It's just that his personality comes so clearly through in his emails that he's established a comfortable relationship, and they've grown comfortable, and they've all created an impression of who he is. And by doing a little research, I was able to ascertain what that impression was, and it was rather remarkable, because it was so different than the way I would have thought of him. But it's effective, and the personality helps. So use a personal tone, but don't go overboard. And when I say don't go overboard, and we'll get to this when we talk about names, but, you know, don't wear out somebody's first name like you see in a direct mail piece where every three lines are calling you by the first name. Or worse, like one of the emails I received today where they call me director. They basically have stolen my email address off my website.
Can I ask a quick question?
Certainly, please.
In some of them, I used to tell little stories about my family in the first two or three lines. Do you think that's a little overboard?
No, I don't. No, I don't. Not if you can do that and be effective, and if it's true.
Okay.
It's actually really, really good. And there's a way to do that. And here's the best way I can explain it. If you do that simply to... if you do it from the wrong motivation, it may come through.
Right, that's what I was worried about.
But if you do it because you actually care about your customers, you're proud of your family, or you're actually willing to, you know, you value them enough that you're sharing your life with, I mean, there is nothing wrong with being authentic with your customers about your own life. And if that's the area that's the way you're approaching it, it's very valuable. But if you approach this in a different way without being authentic, simply to try and fool your customers into liking you, it'll come through. The attitude that you're approaching this with, eventually it comes through.
Okay. Okay.
So that's a good question. And anybody else is free to ask us as we move along through these two. Show your customers your authentic concern. Actually, that's my fourth point. Relationship is the key to repeat sales. This is where we're failing. You know, it is so expensive to get the first sale that many of us, you know, we're so focused on that, and we are losing a lot of money because we're not realizing the true value of the customer is in establishing a relationship. And I don't even like the word, many of the words that we use to reference a customer, we call them the target market, and we call them this, it implies an attitude towards the customer, which is unhealthy and which will keep us from building the kind of long-term relationship and trust that keeps them coming back. Now, I do want to say there's exceptions. There are some businesses you're in where you're only going to get one purchase, and that's just the way it is. And where the market is a commodity, and they could care less about you. But I have found that even in those cases, that it's surprising that with a simple change in your strategy, you may be able to build relationship even in those markets. And by the way, the stronger your relationship, the less price sensitive your marketplace will be. When there's no relationship, it's pure price sensitivity in most cases. But when there is relationship, then you have that opportunity. And there's a lot of retailers that are in businesses where relationship is important because service is so important, because in those particular businesses without service, the product is dangerous or difficult to implement. Leverage that by building a major relationship with the customer. Number five. Go ahead.
I'll jump in right now. Jimmy Ellis.
Yeah, go ahead, Jimmy.
Basically, I just want to tell a little story about when we worked together as a research partner, And the company I worked for was a computer hardware reseller. And we were really big on the comparison search engines, and we've done articles together on that. But there was absolutely no personalization or no email campaign that we had done previously that was effective at all. We sent out a couple emails to probably about 50,000 people. I got very, very little response, and it was similar to the first email that you saw here. And so when we partnered with the Marketing Experiments and worked on this email together, our response was tremendous. And, you know, when you look at a typical e-commerce website, and average conversion for unique visitors is usually only about, you know, a couple percent, 2 to 4%. You know, if you're at 3%, you're doing pretty good. 4%, you're doing real good for unique visitors, depending on your market. And when you figure over 90% of your customers are going somewhere else or something happened. So that's where using the customer service tone starts off your email marketing program, and then using these additional emails to create true value and establish that relationship was extremely important to us. And like I said, that's how we kind of got started on this path. And it worked tremendously for us. I think the next email that we sent out, which was it used a lot of these techniques, I believe over a two-day period, there was an extra 150 to 200 orders for the computer parts site for about, I think it was a 50 to 60,000 email list. But, I mean, just for those 2 days that we were able to measure, I believe it was around $30,000 in volume that we pushed through just that by sending an email out. And we were doing six figures on the comparison engines paying for clicks. And so when you're spending over $100,000 paying for clicks, and I'm almost all you guys that are actually selling products in a retail environment, you're paying for clicks somewhere, whether it's Google or a comparison engine or a keyword campaign somewhere. And getting that customer information and truly setting up relationships and communicating with your customers is going to save you an amazing amount of money. And it always it tends to start small, but if you have a house list you can start taking advantage of, jump right on it, get personal with your customers, you know, come up with something that's going to be really valuable to them and then they're going to want to listen to.
Good. Very good, Jimmy. It's very helpful.
I mean, I just, you know, coming from, you know, we're spending a ton of money, and we see it more than most. A lot of the smaller companies, they might not have a list of 50,000 or 100,000 or 200,000 emailers, but even if you have 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000, and you're in a very specific niche market where you could communicate with your customers better, you'd really, really be able to convert at a higher rate than typical email marketing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very good point. And part of that also, and this is point six, you need to look at what is selling, and you need to feature those items. Typically, you know, there's a law in mathematics, and you've heard the 80-20 rule, but the 80-20 rule is not, you know, just a truism or a cliche in our society. It's based on a mathematician who discovered and proved in a series of experiments that results are disproportionate to, you know, output is disproportionate to input, and typically the range is between 80 and 20 or 90 and 10, but it's there's a severe disproportion. That translates into some typical givens in your operation. If you're a retailer and you have 10,000 products, probably 80% of your volume is coming from 20% of your products. Very critical to identify the right products and get those to your list. And it's even more effective if you can tell by previous purchases or by previous searches or by previous preferences indicated when they signed up what type of information they're interested in. Specificity is the key in marketing. If your offering is specific to their need, you'll see a much, much higher conversion ratio. So, and there's something else about it, too. Consider that a featured product that you place in this email is more than an offering. It's more than a, hey, you want to buy this. It's proof of your value proposition. If you're offering the right customer the right product at the right price, you are now demonstrating that what you say about yourself is true. And even if I don't want that particular product, I will now look at the product I do want because I'm familiar enough with the one you're offering to tell me, hey, these guys really are at a good price. And these guys, you know, all of a sudden, I care. It's also important that when you feature 5 or 10 products in an email, be sure and let the people know, and this isn't always done, it's not always done, it may not have been done in this one, that, hey, you have another 26,000 items on your site, or whatever that number is. If it's 100 items, make sure that they understand the scale of your offering as well as the price of your offering. And scale is very important, and it works good both directions. It works well when what you offer are 500 things and the average vendor offers 20, and it works well when you offer one thing, and you offer one thing because it's the best way for you to truly serve your market is to focus, or you offer just a few prime things. In either case, if your offering is a reflection of your true effort to serve your market and you find you serve them best with many products or you serve them best with less products, then the reality is you're going to get a much stronger response. You also need to, and this is another point.
I had another quick question.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead, but...
Could you tell us your first name?
Oh, Steve from IncredibleGifts.com.
Okay, Steve, go ahead.
Are you saying that since your example is a text email, are you saying that or implying that text email is probably better than an HTML email?
I'm saying that my preference at this moment, based on research, and we're doing another test on that within the next 14 days, but I believe that a plain text email or a low graphic HTML, a very light HTML email, is your best choice. Light HTML may be the best of all because it can have the feel of plain text but still use a few keys like color to draw them in.
Okay.
I think that if you send people an ad, you're going to get less response than when you send people a letter. And if it looks like an ad more than it looks like a letter, you've already started to hurt yourself.
Okay, thank you.
In many cases. It's a very good question.
Thank you.
Also, you want to avoid the illusion of customization. People know when their name is just a mail merge field. And wow, do we ever go overboard with that. First of all, don't say their name too frequently. And secondly, avoid it at all unless you're sure that you're sending people, you really got their name. You know, you can't take everything before the at sign and an email address and turn that into a name. Dear JSS416. You know, the minute you do that, you've spent two words of your attention, two words of this prospect's attention, and you've already told them that you are basically just throwing something at them and hoping they're going to read more. That doesn't work. I'd rather say hello. I'd rather say, dear customer. I'd rather say something that is accurate and more honest. This is number seven. I'm hearing some interference. Is that a question or is that somebody that just needs to mute? If you have any background noise, you can press them. What's the mute number, Brian?
I believe it's star 5.
Brian, feel free to jump in. Brian's very involved in this part of what we do, and Brian is the man who really correlated all this research and worked on this brief. So, Brian, don't hesitate to jump in with your own thoughts, okay?
It's actually star 6 to mute. I'm sorry.
Star 6 will mute your phone. Number 6, number 7, describe, when you talk about customer service, remember people are concerned about two things when it comes to customer service. And this is very important how you describe it. And this doesn't matter if it's in your email or if it's on your site. Mostly they're concerned with getting what they ordered, really getting it, not losing their money or being in any way, delayed, which is the second thing, and that is getting it on time. They want to get exactly what they ordered, the right product, and they want to get it on time. Don't say customer service is good. Saying customer service is good is basically conflating many different issues related to service into one term and saying nothing. Say to them that your items are delivered, you know, within 48 hours and hand-checked or triple-checked for accuracy. You know, say something that is specific and that addresses their true concerns. You'll never be effective at this type of marketing unless you can get out of your own self-interest and get inside of the self-interest of the person that you're trying to speak with. Number 8, use an incentive. Give customers a reason to click through to your website or give them a reason to increase the size of their order if you're using this in a customer service follow-up. But give them an incentive sometimes. Sometimes it's more than just to come back for that offer. Sometimes it's to come back to get a free little software download, or to come back to get a free set of instructions that will help them implement this. Or if they bought a camera accessory, a free course in using your new digital camera. There's a reason, and it's got to be a good one, and it's got to be a real one. And if you use that reason effectively, you'll get them back more frequently. Number nine, consider that the goal of an email, now notice this, the goal of an email, unless it's a very heavy HTML email, and there's exceptions to everything I'm telling you, but in general, is not to sell an item. The goal of an email is to get a click. And the reality is, if you don't get the click, you can't sell an item. So structure every word to get them to click through to the page that's optimized for conversion. And here we identify one of the worst things that that I see, and one of the things that we've addressed with great success in other email campaigns and seen major lifts. We've seen it with subscription sites. We've seen thousands more subscriptions sold because of this, and we've seen it with retail offerings. Philosophers use a word frequently that I just used by incidentally, and that's the word conflate. And that's to basically confuse two separate concepts. And we sometimes use an email as if its goal was to actually make the sale. And so we have enough information on the product to almost sell it, but not quite enough. So people read the product, they almost get sold, and then they read the email, they almost get sold, and then they move on. You do not want any more information about that product than is necessary to get them to get to the page that's designed and optimized to make a sale. There's two steps here, to get a click, to get a sale. Optimize your email to get the click. Optimize the landing page to get the sale. And don't confuse the two, or else you'll get confusing results, and you'll get diluted results. So this is kind of how we did this. And in a moment, I'm going to go over the data and tell you what happened with this particular project, which we just did. This is a fresh experiment. Before I get to that data, which, Brian, I'll tell you when to put in the first table here in just a moment. Does anyone have questions about these nine items that I just went over with you? This is a very important thing, and it's critical for you to answer your questions if you have them. So don't be afraid to ask.
But, I just have a quick question.
Yes, go ahead.
Are you going to post these up on the website?
No, actually, we're going to. The information is so valuable that we're going to keep it a secret and not let anybody ever know about it. And we're expecting that you memorize every word that we just said.
So I guess that's a yes.
Yeah, we will. We will.
It's starting to sound like you're from New York, Flint.
I recognize the voice of a man in the past. It's good to hear you. It's good to hear from you.
Well, I'm still in the present, you know.
Good. 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 May I suggest this? You'll be getting notes from this conversation within the next 24 hours released. And also, if you're a research partner, you may notice something. Our frequency has increased yet again. And not a research partner, I mean a member in the lab. We are now doing three major research briefs per month and two major clinics per month and the major summary issue, which outlines all kinds of resources that we've been releasing that month. And we're doing that with a view to making sure that we're covering with you enough topics that we're giving you information that's going to impact your ROI every, you know, in a given 30-day period. So we've increased the frequency again, and the upcoming reports are really. In fact, Brian, could you tell us quickly? And I'm going to go to the data, but and this wasn't in my notes, but I it's certainly not a commercial because I just want you to know what's coming up. Tell me, Brian, what's on our research calendar for the next three or four issues?
The next issue, I believe, without looking at it, is on smaller pay-per-click search engines, some research we've done there.
Okay, very good.
The following, in 2 weeks, we'll have a report on Yahoo Stores as a marketing tool. And beyond that, I'd have to look, but I can pull it up just...
Go ahead and pull up a couple more, and we'll get back to it later. But before you do that, go ahead and put the first chart, release the first chart. Let's discuss the question that I'd be asking if I were you, because it's not enough for us to give you advice. The point of the lab is that we don't know it probably more than you do. We just know how to ask questions and get answers, and that's what we're doing. And we've got a lot of data from doing that for a long time. With a research partner, we may say this is what we think, but the idea is test, test, test. And here's what this test revealed. The email campaign click-through results based on a single message sent to 58,777 customers. Item one, item two, you're going to want to refresh your page. Brian, is that chart in?
Yes, it's ready.
Okay, so go ahead and refresh your page, and you'll see the chart. Brian, explain what you mean by item 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 in this. By the way, I think the brief needs to be clearer on that, on what the item means. You're talking about a product, aren't you?
That's right. We basically priced or set forth in this email 5 different products that were the lowest price on those 4 comparison search engine sources that we list in the email copy, and then track each of them independently using a click-through script and basically track clicks and click-through rate for each one, and that's what this chart here lists.
Change that to product instead of item in the mailing that we released, Brian, just so it's clear. If you could remember, make a note of that. And then I would like to point out something he just said casually that you may have missed. In order to track these clicks, especially in a plain text email, we used a script. Explain that to them, Brian, so they know how to do this.
Okay. The actual script that we're using is called ProLinks, which we're not affiliated with, but you can find it prolinks.com. That's prolinkz.com. It's basically just a simple CGI script that you install on your server that allows you to set up separate tracking URLs for individual links, and that each one has a different destination and will track click-throughs separately.
Excellent. And may I say this, because I found, much to my surprise, that there's some confusion on this. We're going to post a note on our site. We're not a member, to my knowledge, of anybody's affiliate program. And we don't collect any bounty on any one of these things that we mentioned to you in our experiments. And we've been offered many, and we've been offered major deals from major search engines saying, you know, if you can do X for us or Y for us. When we did the Deal Time report, many people thought Deal Time had hired us to do that report. But the answer is no. And if we ever accepted an engagement to do something like that for someone in that way, that's the first thing you'd read in the report so that you knew what you were getting. So if you read a conversion ratio of search engines or report on any specific vendor, just know that that's just what we discovered. We won't accept an affiliate commission or anything like that for talking about these subjects. What you need to understand from the chart that we have in front of you is you can assume that some recipients of this email clicked on multiple items. So the click-through ratio of 4.72 is high. It's still great. I didn't write this paragraph, and it's written well, but I might have said it differently, simply because any way you look at it, it's still a true click-through ratio of 4.72, simply the fact that if somebody clicks on another product, that in itself is a separate opportunity to sell them. But trying to be really clear with you, Brian's done a really good job of pointing out that the true response rate is probably between 1.99 and 4.72 if you're thinking about one person going to your, you know, one person clicking on one product, or that, you know, all clicks equal one click into the site. So, in fact, as he puts in brackets here, total clicks generated for all items. But I think that that's very, very, it's a high response, particularly for these guys who had a really, really bad response to their other emails. But the real, and Brian, drop in the next charts, the true indicator of the success of this campaign was the actual increase in sales that it generated. We're going to look at that with you. We'll drop another chart in from this experiment. While he's doing that, let me just remember this. We recommend tracking click-throughs for each individual item. This will allow you to gauge which of your product interests interest your customer the most. And the ones that are most interesting are the ones that you need to think about strategically when you do cross-selling on your site. The one that gets the greatest pull may be the one that you want to mention when you're offering a new opportunity to purchase, and you're integrating that with either something featured on your site or something featured in a customer service email. All right, chart should be in front of you. What you're going to look at is 4 days immediately following the release of this. Day one, there were 121 orders, an increase over the previous day, an increase over the previous week of 14%. But notice this, day one didn't have a full day. Day two was the first full day, and its increase in orders, it increased 64.20% over the previous week. That is to say that same day on the previous week, and that's a bit anecdotal, but it's close enough for us to get a feel here, was You know, they had 81 orders that same day, 7 days earlier. On the release of this email, they had 133 orders that day. That's a major percentage. And then you'll see the natural taper. Then the next day, they have an additional 55 orders above average and 45 orders the next day, with an average here, a grand total average of 36.59%. But I think that's not a real fair total. I think you should drop off the 14.15% and average the other three numbers to see what the true impact is, because you can't compare day one. And, Brian, you ought to do this in the actual release, because you can't compare day one with accurately, because day one on the test, on the control, was full, and day one on the actual experiment was partial. Does that make sense, Brian?
Yes.
Yeah. So well, I would.
Just worth noting that there's an error on the notes that I just posted, but if you refresh the page now, it should be corrected. The
okay.
Total was incorrect there.
Okay. So you know, here's the bottom line. I mean, here's the absolute bottom line. They probably made an additional $21,000 by sending a simple email. The cost to send the email was nothing more than the time to get it ready and the tiny amount that it cost them to release it to their list. Now, I know that we could factor, you know, what it cost to maintain their list and all that, but they already had that list, and they were already maintaining it, and they were already making no money with it. So the reality is, that's, you know, if you're a small vendor, as they are, reasonably speaking, you know, somebody just got a new car by sending an email and didn't spend a nickel more in pay-per-click to get it. The bottom line is, we believe that an intelligent approach to emails can generate a significant return for publishers and for retailers. And if you lack the ability to create original content, focus on other ways to create value for your customers. And that's what was behind this email. I mean, strategically, instead of offering them a white paper, which they didn't want, instead of offering them tips and tricks, which is you know, way tired, instead of offering them a great email and the promise to deliver one every 2 weeks, which then degenerates into one email every 6 weeks or whenever you think about it or have a special reason to sell them something, or instead of offering them a great big HTML graphic catalog page, what we did was we thought about, what is it that would really serve these people who have trusted us with their names? And we thought, you know, they'd like to know, you know, maybe if items X through Z are, you know, how they compare in price to the rest of the internet. And since we think we're the lowest price in those categories, makes a great, makes sense to report it. Now, I even suggested something that I know many of you will not find palatable, but I said, if you make this a regular emailing, then you need to report when somebody's product is lower priced than yours on another site. Now, you might say to me, but that's not, you know, that's going to send somebody to someone else. Well, then either you should have a lower price, or you should not reflect that the email is honestly surveying and providing the right information. The reality is, I think a customer would trust you more when you send him to another site because you found a price that was lower than yours. And I would rather have the customer's trust than his money in the short run and in the long run. And you'll find that trust will translate into money. And it's really the only way to approach this correctly. All right, so do we have any questions? I've completed this briefing, and we can talk about that. It will be released. I am going to delay it slightly because I've noticed that there have been a number of things said in this recording that are not part of the brief that could be helpful for you, and I'd really like to get some of the data from the recording added to this issue before we send it out. But barring that, we'll be releasing this issue and this report, and we'll also be releasing an audio recording of this conference. So any questions from anyone?
Hey, Flynn, I do have a question.
Yes.
Blank Coop.
Yes.
What was your response from the people you were mailing to? What's the magic frequency that you found for these kinds of mailings where
Excellent
people get
question.
Kind of picked off at you and consider it
Excellent
a spam
question.
Or whatever?
Yeah. In your particular case, Stephen, I would suggest one emailing every 3 months because your emails are particularly difficult. But for most people, Stephen's a friend, and I'm giving him a hard time. he he's a research partner, and we're immersed. We're very mean to our research partners. Stephen, the question is really good, and the answer is 2 weeks is an optimum frequency. Be careful about more than 2 weeks, though. Once a week can work, but if you're going to do once a week, let them know that's what you're going to do in advance, so when they register, they expect it. If you do only once a month, you lose continuity. Optimum frequency tends to be 2 weeks for these types of mailings.
Okay.
Very smart question. By the way, I can say this, I believe. To give Stephen a commercial, he's not that he's asking for that, but he's at SWUG, SSWUG.com, and they've got the best site in their niche on the Internet. And you can learn a great deal from watching it. It isn't a site that's designed to be graphically beautiful. It's for SQL Server users. It's very useful if you're in that industry. And for people, you know, it's more than SQL Server, and Stephen could explain that. But I just want to say there's a lot to be learned from Stephen's site. It's a very, very smart site, and it works.
Just to correct you real quick.
Yeah.
It's swug.org. .org.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think com is redirected to the same place, but you're right.
Yes.
Any other questions before I release you? Okay. Are you was this briefing, I ask this frequently because it helps us as we're preparing the next things. Did you find this briefing helpful for you? Talk to me.
Very helpful.
Good. Good. Somebody else tell me.
It was
tell
good.
Me what you needed.
It was right to the point as usual.
Okay. Good.
This is
yes.
Wayne. I found that your points at the beginning, unless I missed it, I didn't follow you all the way with points four or five. And it would be great if you could, after you gave 9 points like that, if you could do a brief review of what those 9 points were. That
okay.
Would have been very helpful.
Okay. Right. I changed the order of a point or two because it was in keeping with what I was explaining. And but you will get a copy of all 9 points, Wayne, too,
great.
You know, in the email we're sending out as well.
Other than that, so, it was perfect.
Wonderful. Thank you. I appreciate any feedback like that. Guys, some of you come and visit us at this conference, and that means you, Roy, by the way.
Okay. I may just sign up.
Do that. It'd be good to get you down there. And I want to meet some of you guys that are faithful and are on the phone a lot, listening to these things, and it'll be a good time for us to connect face-to-face. It's going to be so small in terms of, because we're limiting it to 50, we're going to have one of our guys there for every 5 visitors. So there's going to be actually breakout sessions where you actually can sit down with an expert, talk with them, and apply, you know, ask them questions and really pick their brain. Anyway, it's great to have everybody. I shall continue to research, and this next issue that we're coming up with, I think you'll find fascinating. So thank you. Go ahead.
Flint, this is Greg at trackhouse.com.
Yes, Greg.
Just wanted to thank you. It was great information. I wrote feverishly, coming down to rapidly joining you down in Orlando.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I appreciate that. Thank you. It helps to know. We're also launching a set of forums in cooperation with Andy Borland. And after a conference like this, you'll be able to go into the forums and hash it out with people and talk, and that'll be a new thing that's going to be really useful for everybody. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen and ladies, and we shall talk to you soon.